The Stand isn't just Stephen King's apocalyptic masterpiece, it's a mirror reflecting our deepest anxieties about civilization's fragility. The story begins with something mundane yet terrifying, a security guard named Charles Campion fleeing a military base after an accident releases a weaponized strain of influenza. By the time his car crashes at a Texas gas station, Campion is already dying, face discolored, neck swollen grotesquely. The handful of men who help him, including Vietnam veteran Stu Redman, have no idea they've just been exposed to Project Blue, a military bioweapon with a 99.4% mortality rate. What makes this apocalypse so chilling is its mathematical inevitability. Each infected person spreads Captain Trips through ordinary human contact, a handshake, a kiss, a shared meal. A highway patrolman infects an insurance salesman during a routine traffic stop. The salesman infects dozens at a diner. The chain reaction multiplies exponentially through bridge games, swimming pools, and everyday interactions. Meanwhile, the government's response proves as deadly as the disease itself, quarantining towns with barbed wire while feeding the public lies about a Russian flu strain. As doctors and soldiers themselves begin dying, the horrifying truth becomes clear. Civilization itself is collapsing. As the superflu claims its final victims, survivors begin experiencing strange, shared dreams. Two figures emerge. Mother Abigail, a 108-year-old black woman in Nebraska representing goodness, and Randall Flagg, a demonic, dark man embodying malevolence. These supernatural forces draw survivors toward either Boulder, Colorado, Mother Abigail's haven, or Las Vegas, Flagg's domain. These dreams reveal humanity's spiritual nature. In a world stripped of institutions and technology, people become attuned to forces beyond rational explanation. Glenn Bateman theorizes that humans possess psychic abilities normally drowned out by civilization's noise. Flagg captivates through terrible charisma, offering exactly what vulnerable people crave. To Lloyd Henrid, he brings food. To Trashcan Man, permission to burn. To Harold Lauder, revenge. Mother Abigail offers no easy rewards, only responsibility, difficult choices, and the understanding that goodness requires sacrifice. In Boulder, Mother Abigail's followers rebuild society from scratch, establishing a free zone committee to govern their growing community, a fascinating exploration of what people might create given a second chance. The committee showcases different governance approaches through Stu Redman's practical leadership, Glenn Bateman's academic theories, Franny Goldsmith's long-term planning, and Nick Andros's thoughtful written guidance. King portrays this community building with nuance. The free zone isn't utopian. People retain their pre-plague problems and prejudices. Meetings become procedural quagmires, and security debates create tension. Through these conflicts, we see how quickly humans revert to familiar social patterns, even after catastrophe. Their greatest challenge comes when Harold Lauder, resentful over losing Franny to Stu, plants a bomb, killing several key members. This act forces survivors to confront an uncomfortable truth. Evil doesn't solely exist with Flagg's followers in Las Vegas. It lives within their own hearts. While Boulder struggles with democratic governance, Las Vegas, under Randall Flagg, operates with brutal efficiency. His totalitarian regime values productivity and loyalty above all. Vegas functions as a twisted version of pre-plague society, with casinos serving as administrative centers and hotels as housing. Those following his rules enjoy comfort and security, but at the price of absolute obedience, enforced through public crucifixions and surveillance. King's portrayal of Las Vegas isn't simplistic villainy. Many who join Flagg are ordinary people seeking structure amid chaos, former teachers, accountants, and service workers who find comfort in clear hierarchies. When Tom Cullen observes that Vegas residents seem wrong, it's not because they're monsters, but because they've surrendered moral autonomy for security. The novel's most disturbing scenes occur in Vegas, including a drug user's public crucifixion that becomes a community spectacle. This illustrates how oppression functions through ordinary people's willingness to participate in atrocities to maintain their standing. Yet even in this dark realm, cracks appear in Flagg's system. Small acts of resistance multiply as his powers wane and his temper flares. When he murders his pregnant bride, Nadine, in a rage, it signals the beginning of his regime's collapse. Mother Abigail returns with a divine message. Four men, Stu, Larry, Ralph, and Glenn, must confront Flagg unarmed, relying solely on faith. They accept this likely death sentence. Their westward journey becomes a spiritual pilgrimage, each man feeling emptied like vessels preparing for divine purpose. When Stu breaks his leg, the others must continue without him. In Las Vegas, Glenn Bateman displays remarkable courage by laughing in Flagg's face, calling him nothing, an imposter whose power depends on others' fear. His execution reveals the emptiness behind Flagg's facade. The final confrontation defies expectations. As Flagg prepares to execute Larry and Ralph, Trash Can Man arrives with a nuclear warhead. The bomb detonates, destroying Las Vegas. The Boulder representative's sacrifice serves its purpose not through direct confrontation, but by witnessing evil's self-destruction. The epilogue balances hope with foreboding. Stu returns to Boulder to find Franny has given birth to a son, Peter, whose recovery from Captain Tripp's suggests possible human immunity. King undercuts this optimism by showing Boulder quickly developing armed police and political factions. Stu and Franny's departure for Maine represents their rejection of centralized power and belief that humanity needs to disperse and rebuild. They hope dispersal might buy time, Peter's lifetime, his children's lifetimes, until the year 2100 maybe, before humanity recreates conditions for its downfall. The final sequence reveals Flagg has survived, emerging on a distant island to manipulate a primitive tribe, showing how charismatic evil exploits human desires for advancement. King's closing line about life being such a wheel captures civilization's cyclical nature and the tension between community and power. The wheel turns inexorably, but individual choices still carry profound moral weight. The Stand endures because it speaks to fundamental human concerns, our vulnerability to forces beyond our control, and our capacity for both cruelty and compassion. Through characters like Stu and Larry Underwood, King shows ordinary people rising to extraordinary challenges. The novel examines our relationship with technology and power. The Superflu, born from military research, represents humanity destroyed by its own creation. Survivors must decide which aspects of pre-plague society to rebuild, questions that remain relevant in our age of climate crisis and emerging technologies. The Stand explores faith in religion, humanity, and community, highlighting the significance of moral choice in an apparently indifferent universe. Mother Abigail's faith sustains her through decades of hardship despite the demands of her God. In our divided world, The Stand reminds us that our most important choice isn't between left and right, but between light and dark, between facing our responsibilities to one another or surrendering to our basest impulses. As Mother Abigail tells her followers, love each other. My God, children, do that before dark comes. This remains the most radical stand we can take.